What they said, all right. What did they say, Becky?
They basically squelched the idea. They said they weren't interested in doing that at all.
And what reasons do you remember that they gave? We can't really.
Good question.
You see, interestingly enough, my perception of these meetings is that Paul Lee has his own agenda and really kind of plays it kind of ad hoc as he goes along. He doesn't open up the chair to discussion from the board, really, much less the guests who are let's say the public that arrives, because it is a public meeting. And for anyone who's interested, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meets every fourth Thursday at 4 o'clock at Garfield Park Church, and it is an open meeting. It's a nonprofit. You have a right to be there. You have a right to speak, and you have a right to record. But I'll tell you, you better assert that right, because if you try to, they will try to intimidate you or talk you out of it, or you know, shut you up for an hour and a half, and then shut you down when you try to say what you want to say. At least that's what they did for me. And I guess it seemed your proposal, Bob, was very reasonable, which is
one of the things that came back to me was, well, where would the money? Who is the group that would want to do something like this, and where would the money come from?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, my informal connection with any group that would want to do that is the Save Our Shelter group.
Yes, mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is having an emergency meeting at, I believe it's 7 o'clock, could be 7:30, you might show up for
7 o'clock on Wednesday, January 10th.
At the Underground Cafe, which is in the basement of the Veterans Building, down on Pacific Avenue at the head of the mall, and everyone's invited to come to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that, you know, Save Our Shelters, or now called the River Street Refugees, has already proposed, they've given up on the Citizens Committee, and they've given up on the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and they see this issue, which I've been ragging on for the last hour, as being kind of a secondary one, and sort of a dead duck and a dead dog, and why kick a dead horse, and that sort of thing. To me, it's not dead at all. I mean, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is the group that runs the majority of the homeless services for emergency shelter in town. I mean, they are the people. Sorry?
They own the land.
And they own the land on which, you know, the only legal open-air shelter or campground was located, and they closed it in violation of their promises, in violation of a legal contract, in violation of basic human needs. They closed it, and now we have hundreds of people subject to the sleeping ban who are not subject before. And Mike Rotkin certainly isn't offering them any way out of this. He's not offering to send them out to New Brighton Beach and put them up in campgrounds. You know, I mean, this is a choice little publicity stunt for Big Mike, who can prove, you know, who can show he's a sweet guy, you know, during the Christmas season, so keep the campers out of the merchant's hair. But when it comes time to, you know, deal with the scene on the new year, you know, he's all business, and he can say, you know, he can pose as the great defender of the mm-hmm. dispossessed.
His quote in the newspaper to the campers was, well, you can either go into the armory or the ISSP, you can leave the county, or you can go back to doing those things that you had done in previous winters, presumably sleeping under bridges and in the bushes. And that's no solution at all. That's no leadership at all.
You know,
what we need here is the resolve of both CCH and the City Council to find a new site for an open-air shelter and to promote this as a compassionate and a reasonably cost-effective temporary solution. I'd say temporary because I like to think someday we won't have homeless people. And until we have a site, a legal place for people to see, to sleep, we need to effectively push to have a moratorium on the sleeping ban
mm-hmm.
so that we are not criminalizing homeless people for sleeping. This is just unconscionable.
And it's a persecution. Personally, as a person who has slept around this town in many different situations, when you know that you have to worry about the police waking you up in the middle of the night.
Like just like that.
Just like that, even worse, according to some of the rumors that I've heard. It's horrible to try to get a good night's sleep that way, when you're worried more about the police than you are worried about everything else, and that's not fair for anyone.
Yeah, I think...
Well, that's our attempt to separate the sheep from the goats. We'll take the deserving radio people and put them in a campground. The undeserving get to hide in the bushes and put pillows over their heads. I apologize for that, folks. It's defective equipment. Blame it on the technical staff. That's what I say. And I want to thank Backburner Bob for calling in. It wasn't your fault, Bob. You didn't do it. I did want to ask you what you thought about the sleeping ban, whether you're going to be at that meeting 3:30 tomorrow, Tuesday, January 9th at City Hall, which is right across from the library, for all you folks who are interested in coming. I'm hoping we can get some kind of a hot meal there for those people who are, you know, not able to eat in cafes and restaurants and are going to miss the 4 o'clock meal if they come to this, who have an interest to actually have some food there for them. But I'd like to know, if anybody is interested in showing up at this thing, give me a call at 423-4833. I'd like to get a sense of how many people are interested. And here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Robert. Hello, Becky. I'd like to direct this call to Becky.
Who is this?
This is Coral Leah.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Becky, I'm glad to hear you on the air.
She's actually, let's turn up the volume again a little bit. Okay, speak again.
Okay, can you hear me? It is hard to hear the callers a little bit. I'll speak way up.
Good. Okay, go ahead. You're talking to Becky Johnson and, of course, Suzanne Loma. Luma.
Luma?
Luma.
All right.
The witch woman.
Taping the show so I can hear it back later. All right. Since I'm sort of going to ask Becky her opinion of what's happening, if she would like to divulge. Do you? First of all, how did she get on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless? And does she think there's going to be any pressure for her to leave? And does she think that her being asked to leave Community Perspectives has anything to do with it?
That's actually an issue we were going to be talking about, and we haven't yet broached. Perhaps.
And also, why is Celia Scott suddenly leaving? These are just little details.
Yeah, 6 years. Celia Scott is ending her six-year term and moving on to better things as attorney and politician, and who knows.
But I think Becky's doing a great job, so I just am curious if she feels like there's going to be any pressure on her now. She's getting a bit broader with. On radio, even.
Yeah, Becky, you're going to get shafted for coming on the show and saying all these things about the CCH?
Thanks for calling in, Coral. The way that I became a member of CCH was this summer when I've been working with the Homeless Garden Project for a while, and I became very active in trying to help Ray McMinn with his legal problems. And I was working with Paul.
Ray is a man who's being unfairly held in Virginia for a decades-old charge, and he's currently coming before a parole board, and we're hoping he'll be released. Any new word on that, by the way, Becky?
He met with a parole board interviewer, and yes, it was a big fiasco because none of the letters of support or the videotape that we had sent, or even letters that had been sent way back last August, actually arrived in Ray's file to be reviewed by the interviewer.
Problems with postal delivery, perhaps?
Ray has not been getting his mail as he ought to. Apparently the Virginia prison are very lackadaisical about getting mail to prisoners. They sort through it, they look it over, they hand it out to other people. And Ray is very upset with how his mail has not been arriving.
Well, it sounds like not just his mail, but the mail going to the parole board isn't getting there either. Unless, I guess you have to send a registered or certified, or maybe send an armed guard with some dogs across the United States.
They told us, when I talked to the Virginia Parole Board, they said that any documents that had been sent more recently than 45 days ago would not be there for review for Ray's case. And I was outraged because I had sent approximately 25 letters of support for Ray in the last 2 weeks, and none of them were there for him at his hearing. Oh, no, it wasn't a hearing. They corrected me several times. It's not a hearing. It's an interview. It's a lot of shenanigans going on in Virginia. And we're not done yet. Ray's getting pretty discouraged. There's plenty more that we can do to help Ray in his situation. And through helping Ray, show a procedure to help all prisoners who find themselves unfairly prosecuted.
Ray is he's both a target of some of my criticism and also an object of my support as well, because he's also on the board of the Citizens mm-hmm. Committee for the Homeless, but in my mind he's the token nigger in the group, as we would say. He's
okay.
The appointed homeless person who essentially, you know, is compliant with the needs and desires of the big boys. And actually, even if he weren't, it wouldn't make much difference because he's only one voice.
I'm sure he wouldn't take that characterization to heart, Robert.
No, I don't think he'd agree uh-huh. with me, but he knows that I feel that he's very much more conservative on issues than I am, and more conservative than many homeless people who are clients of the services that the Citizens Committee supposedly is running on behalf of homeless people.
Okay, in answer of Coral's questions, this summer, I called Paul Lee when he was in Wisconsin, and during the course of discussions about how to help Ray with his situation, Paul asked me if I'd like to serve on the board of directors at the Homeless Garden Project. And so I accepted, and that included an automatic seat on CCH. So that's how I came. I'm a really new member. I've only been to, I think, 4 meetings now. I'm maybe not as informed on a lot of the issues as some of the more long-term members. From what I understand about Celia Scott is, according to the bylaws of CCH, the maximum stay a person can have is 2 consecutive 3-year terms. She's just completed her second 3-year term and hence is stepping down. We'll miss her. I think she was one of the better members of the board.
Sorry, go ahead.
And let's see, the third question that you asked is, do I think I'll get any pressure to step down from CCH? I don't know. I suppose that could happen. I can honestly say that no one on the board has given me any indication of that at this time. And let's see, I think you asked one other. About the community perspectives thing.
Do you think Charlie Reed has any influence on CCH's decision making?
Let me tell the audience who Charlie Reed is. He's the director, I believe, of Community Perspectives, who's sort of the anchor host, who has actually assumed major powers and has been firing different people at different times throughout the fall. I guess Janelle. What's her name? Montoya?
Janelle Montero.
Montero, sorry, Janelle.
Was forced off.
Was one of them, and Becky has been dumped as host. And
he claims that she left voluntarily, but she claims she was dumped.
And there was a whole brouhaha about that in Metro Santa Cruz, the weekly magazine, which... Charlie Reed is the that's who he is. Go ahead, Becky.
He's the executive producer of Community Perspectives.
You see him every week on Community Perspectives, which airs at 6 o'clock on Tuesday nights.
Apparently, after last Tuesday's show, where our event of the week was the saga of the River Street refugees, he was very upset over the choice of River Street refugees as an event. He was upset over some other issues regarding that event. And that was one of the reasons he cited for my removal as host.
Wasn't there also some statement made, I heard a rumor being bruited about the studio, that he had said he didn't want any more homeless material aired because it was too much homeless information? And I'm not aware that Channel 71 has been having lots of homeless shows. In fact, I think there's only been... Only the politically correct homeless stuff has made it on anyway, like the Homeless Garden Project, which is, you know, the feather in the cap of all the liberals who have no problem with people getting arrested under the sleeping ban.
Well, since I've been on the show, we, for event of the week, we did the CCH 10th anniversary as our event of the week, in which there was a homeless person who was featured on there, but the vast majority of people were...
But I heard a rumor about that, that homeless person was featured only because Celia Scott, who, as we know, has got a nice conflict of interest by being both a board member on CCH and a member of city council, and has throughout misled people about what the city council can do under the open-air shelter situation, and supported CCH's bureaucratic determination to make sure those trailers go up, even if it means the ruination of the only place that's legal for people to sleep in Santa Cruz, that Celia Scott, because a piece of video with her could not be aired because it was too dark, they slipped in a homeless person just sort of by the by. Is there any truth to that rumor?
Some of the editors came up and they apologized to me for having this homeless person that was at the meeting, and I did an interview with him, that they apologized that it aired, and they said that they meant to put Celia Scott in there, but there was poor lighting, and so they couldn't use the clip, and so they put the homeless person in. I thought that was very strange. The whole CCH is all about homeless people, and I would have preferred to have probably 50% of the voices expressed in that piece be homeless people.
Now, what about this rumor that there's... Charlie said something to the effect of, you know, no more homeless stuff, we've had been soaked with it, when in fact, as you're saying, there have only been two homeless pieces, and one of them, this 10th anniversary piece, was actually a celebratory piece.
Three, actually. There was the piece? Women's Organic Flower Enterprise piece that we did, which is part of the Homeless Garden Project. Then we did the CCH 10th anniversary meeting, and then this one on Tuesday with the River Street Refugee Saga, which I think... probably that was really the most truthful segment that we had on the condition of homeless people in Santa Cruz.
You did have a man very critical, Michael Sheridan, who I call Rolling Thunder Mike, who had talked about Rotkin and other politicians being responsible for deaths and illnesses that happened because of the tensions, anxieties, and dislocations of the campers, who have been, you know, essentially in a condition of high anxiety from November on, when CCH has been breaking its word, moving things around, betraying promises. Their breaking of the promise to keep the campground open is only the latest in a series of broken promises. I actually did a lengthy flyer called Broken Promises, talking about CCH's recent abuses around this stuff. I don't want to go into it now, but the details, I've gone through it in the show before, as far back as November 2nd, they said they were, you know, going to keep the campground open, and then suddenly everybody had to leave on November 2nd. It was another weird scene.
We went down and filmed on November 2nd and talked to a lot of the campers and found out a lot of what the disgruntlement was from the campers, that... that they're commonly told one story and then something else happens and things change and they're given a promise and then the promise is reneged on. There were numerous complaints that the campground, that the people who had managed the campground were somewhat lackadaisical in their management, that they had, for instance, the porta potty situation. Porta potties are, you're supposed to have one porta potty for every 15 users. Here was a campground that had 200 people with three porta potties.
Cora, let me interrupt you too, Becky, because I'd like to move along here. Is there more that you want to discuss here, Cora, on any of this stuff?
I just want to commend Becky for her courageous and her courageous work and her strength.
Well, Becky
and
is.
Keep going, and we support her out there and love her.
Thank you, Coral.
Yeah.
And thank you for your letter.
And Robert,
yes.
Good luck. I don't know when you're going up to San Francisco. Be listening.
I'll tell you more about that. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Coral.
So... dear. Now, that's our occasional warning, which...
We were trying to wake up all of you listeners.
And we have another phone call coming in. Briefly, I want to say that San Francisco demonstration happened on Saturday, and I'll be talking more about that. Here's an incoming call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, Robert, this is John. I don't know if you know it, but almost none of your callers are audible.
Really?
Really.
Oh, boy.
They're way down. I had to turn my volume way up to hear Bob and Carl also. I don't know what the problem is, but that's what's happening out here.
No, I appreciate that that input, John.
Okay, talk to you later. Good show.
All right.
Bye.
Well, callers, we can hear you on our radio, but maybe that's because we're right next to the studio here. We're in the studio, and also we can hear you on the phone. But do keep trying to call in. We're gonna have to ask you to really shout into the phone, and you know, you can maybe do some singing. We could use some good songs. Apropos of which, in today's Mercury News, Mike Rodkin is on the front page of the second section, tuned to the beat of the city, Santa Cruz politics in the key of G, and we have. Several lyrics by Mike. He's actually gotten his lyrics in the paper. Tell you a story, tell you a tale, it'll make you cry, it'll make you wail. Happened close to Christmas Day, the mayor sent the homeless down Aptos way. They got to stay 2 weeks in the park, sleeping in tents in the rain and the dark. Some folks in Aptos began to yell. 42 campers made their life hell. Pretty scary, brought their puppies. I don't know, but I've been told streets of Aptos are paved with gold. Don't know how things could get much worse. The homeless invasion, an alien curse, horror story, Christmas spirit. Now, I'm a liberal to a degree. I want everyone to be free. But if you think I'll let the homeless move in next door to marry me and, or sorry, to me and marry my daughter, you're crazy. I wouldn't do it for all the gold in Aptos Creek. So now old Aptos has it rough. Old Walt's life is mighty tough. Mexicans invading from Watsonville and homeless campers might be there still. Send a letter. Call the army. It ain't what I know. It ain't that I don't know life's hard, but don't look for help in my backyard. Not in Aptos, not in this life. Greasy kid stuff. Well, this is pretty slimy kid stuff, if you ask me, because the man who has evicted hundreds of people is the very man writing these lyrics. This is like Scott Kennedy doing the Resource Center for Nonviolence 100th anniversary of Gandhi, when that same year he has passed laws making begging illegal. Here's an incoming phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, am I there?
Yes, you are.
Okay, could I not be in there?
Hang on, okay, we'll take you off the air. And, Before we do that, why don't you talk about that?
Yeah.
What's up?
Well, actually, let me switch subjects briefly to make an announcement. On Saturday, January 20th, at the Vets Hall, the Green Party is going to be hosting, the 20th and the 21st, the Green Party. We'll be hosting a symposium, they'll have a forum, they'll workshops, to which the public is invited to help support Green Party candidates and Green Party policy. In the evening on the 20th, there will be a benefit concert for a new television show that will be coming out on community television. The show is called The Living Room. It's co-produced by myself, Becky Johnson, and Jim Mason. And this is going to be a free speech format program for the community of Santa Cruz, a television show where we're going to provide access for a community to come up with any number of issues, events, and topics that are near and dear to the hearts of the Santa Cruz community.
Probably contact me off air later.
And
we're 423 Huff. Call me there.
We encourage you to come on and mark it down on your calendar, pencil in the 20th of the rock bands Idlewild and Young Dreads. Will be our musical entertainment, and please come down for the concert. Wild time, a lot of dancing and fun, and to raise a little money for the Living Room.
Cool. I second that. You know, I had a bunch of stuff I was going to try to cram into this show, and I'm going to start doing it now since the clock is ticking. We never know if we run past noon on this show until noon actually hits. We've got some guests in the studio. I'm going to talk to them a little bit now because they deserve that attention. Becky has been doing some, I would call her a co-host rather than a guest, but she's also, of course, a guest. But we also have Suzanne on. Suzanne and I ran into at the Underground Coffee House about 4 or 5 days ago. We started talking. I gravitated to her vicinity and began hugging her in my usual manner. Eventually she succumbed to my charms. And she's on the air now, and I'm very impressed. So far we've been keeping a safe distance. But Suzanne, you've been living outdoors for how long now?
I've been outdoors on and off for about 5 years now. And it, for me, it's a lifestyle of choice now. It's a lot different when it wasn't a lifestyle of choice. I have very fortunate to have a very safe spot to be in. I'm up in the woods in Boulder Creek.
Would you like to tell the sheriffs exactly where you are?
I don't think so.
But wait a minute.
I don't like having a safe spot.
Now hold it. Let's not. We know it's not illegal to camp in the county. They would never harass you, would they?
You'd probably never find it anyways. But if you'd like to tour sometime,
that's the point I'm making. Of course, is that
it's across the creek and by the nice grove of redwoods. And it's
No. I'm not asking.
Past the meadow.
No. She's giving us a map here.
And through the woods.
That's the one. You know that spot.
You see, in the county. It is actually, there's no camping ban that's countywide. Thanks to ex-supervisor Gary Patton, there are several areas of the county where there are camping bans, like Carbonera Creek and Tanner Heights and Paso Tiempo. But most of the county, it is legal to sleep, and it's also, there's actually a specific provision of the law which allows you to pull over and do roadside resting in a vehicle. And in other words, the laws that the sheriffs are enforcing in the county are not really laws. If they tell you it's illegal to sleep there, they're lying to you, unless they have a trespass complaint, or unless you're in one of the very few areas where a camping ban is on. So
you know, it's very hard for me to understand the concept of being illegal to sleep. You know, you try to explain this to other people that I see in my journeys throughout the country and the activist work that I do, and it's to explain to someone that it's illegal to sleep, they just have a really hard time understanding this.
And illegal to sit.
Oh, don't forget that one.
And we can thank Mike Rodkin, the musician, for that.
Illegal to pass, circulate petitions.
Yes, illegal to circulate petitions in front of cafes, sitting at a...
Illegal to pass out flyers.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget activism at the farmer's market.
That's not true. It's not illegal to pass out flyers in front of cafes, as long as you keep walking. It's
illegal to stand still and pass out flyers.
Activity
everywhere. Build some more prisons.
Yeah, I think I like to play devil's advocate in these cases, because I do oppose what I think Becky is referring to, the downtown ordinance, as the anti-homeless laws
and
downtown.
And the newest one we heard, borrow a pen, go to jail.
Oh, yes.
Say what?
Borrow a pen, go to jail. Yeah, that, I don't know if that actually made it on air here. I think that's a tape we have yet to play. I think we mentioned it in the last show. In the last show, we mentioned that there was a youth who tried to borrow a pen from Subway, a business on the Upper Mall, and he got... He was abused verbally by an employee after the employee was rather rude to him, and he got rude to the employee, and they got into an actual physical dispute, and apparently they called the police and tried to have him arrested, and this happened...
For borrowing a pen.
For no doubt the charge was something else, but it developed out of borrow a pen, go to jail. It was kind of the amusing tagline, but the basic line has to do with the fact that instead of... It actually worked out pretty well. I think I mentioned in the last show, the merchant and I discussed it, and I talked to the victim, I should say, the fellow who was...
Falsely accused and
attacked, and then he was assaulted apparently by the employee, and as is the case with Stuart Martin in the ID building, who has made a practice of assaulting people and then charging them.
Well, he was kind of roughed up by the police, too.
He was given pain compliance holds and rammed into a seat, and...
He twisted his arm. That was when I first noticed the action.
Yeah, we were both there. This was about a week ago. That, as I said, was eventually resulted in the man being released.
One of the things that's interesting is that in the state of California, we have over 1,000 new laws beginning on January 1st.
Oh, quite so.
And if any of you know how to get a copy of them, it would be a marvelous idea to figure that out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of those new laws is the infamous, the return of the loitering law. I don't know if you know about this, but loitering laws were declared unconstitutional about 13 years ago nationally. It's illegal to simply make it it's not constitutional to make it a crime to walk without identification, or loiter, as they used to call it. Police were arresting and harassing a man named Edward Larson, or Lawson, I think it was Lawson, down in Orange County repeatedly, and that he would walk, he was a black man, he'd walk through white neighborhoods at night. I think he lived there, but uh, he uh, he insisted on being able to jog or something, and the cops would always pull him over and harass him, demand he have ID, and he eventually got the case to the Supreme Court.
All right.
And they threw out all the loitering laws. Well, California has returned with a new loitering law, and this one is under the guise of dealing with drug dealing. Yes.
Oh, great.
The drug war. It is illegal to loiter with intent to sell drugs.
Is that like Long's drug store?
No. We're not talking about the toxic drugs, alcohol, nicotine. We're talking about
sugar.
Sugar or chocolate. No.
Talking about Valium.
No. We're talking about the drugs of the street, the drugs that give local entrepreneurs on the street sometimes the little money they can bring in some of the urban ghetto areas. But anyway, that's a new law that's coming down the pike.
There was actually one good law that went into effect on January 1st, 1996. And don't quote me on this. I think it was Senate Bill AB 1533. I hope I have that number right. But basically, the upshot of it is, as of January 1st, 1996, social workers are no longer immune from prosecution, and they are not immune from civil recourse. So this means like social workers, AFDC workers, Child Protective Service workers, those people, if in the course of their conducting their business as they do, if they are negligent or fraudulent or abusive or in some way, the people whose lives are dramatically affected by their actions have recourse to sue. And please keep that in mind. If you have any dealings with these people, you have rights now that you didn't have last week.
Well, that's nice, Becky, but I understand you've been getting calls from the Sheriff's Department. Last time we got a call from you while we were on the air that some deputy was going to show up at your house, and you were in some consternation. You, of course, are involved in not merely something of a brouhaha with the CPS, but you're also doing a documentary about abuses in Child Protective Services and other agencies that deal with kids here in Santa Cruz County, right?
Yes, my co-producer and I are producing a documentary on abuses in the family law system in Santa Cruz County. So this includes not only Child Protective Services, but also the courts and mediators and special masters, special attorneys for children, that sort of youth services. If any of the listeners are having any problems with those agencies, call Robert and he'll refer you to me.
423-4833, or if you will, 423-HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. That's the number to call, both if you have a problem with CPS or if you have an interest in a subject that you've heard mentioned on the air. We got one caller asking about the question about Free Radio Santa Cruz. There's a judicial hearing upcoming, which I'm about to read a press release about. I'll certainly give you information on that. If you want to volunteer to help for civil rights downtown, we're talking in the last show about the Velvet Venom Awards, which we did balloting on the streets about a week ago. This is the poll we did, the plebiscite on which business is the most bigoted. I mean, there is some controversy as to who gets that award and who holds that particular honor.
Oh, there's some tough competition here.
It's tough, Becky. It's tough. And it really requires some real careful sifting here to see who's going to come out on top. It may require some real careful replaying of different bigoted episodes to see which really merits the Velvet Venom Award.
Now, Robert, are you still accepting ballots on this?
We have actually given a special extension to the deadline there has been such a public demand for the Velvet Venom Award ballots. Actually, there hasn't been any demand at all. But we're hoping there will be a demand for the Velvet Venom Award ballots because, indeed, it seemed to be favorably received by the people who were willing to cast those ballots. Actually, we're interested in getting stories, and I mean true stories, folks, of what has been happening at particular businesses in the last year or two.
Personal discrimination.
And personal discrimination in businesses.
So come on and get involved.
So if you give a call to 423-HUFF, and you can just tell me your story on the line, we'll broadcast it here on the air. We need this information because I would like to see a whole new system downtown where businesses do not have the unfettered power to simply throw out anybody they want with great impunity, often totally unfairly, at the personal whim of some bigot like Stuart Martin, for instance, of the ID building, who in late December threw out a guy who said, all homeless people are thieves, said Stuart Martin to this man. The man was trying to buy something, shoved him down
the street.
There's
an enlightened view there.
Yeah, I definitely so.
Pretty generally enlightened.
I'm going to slip in this press release.
Maybe we'll enlighten him of customers.
That would be nice.
I'd like to encourage everyone to get involved, whether it's their local community or their state or anything, a global situation, because without speaking up, you need to realize that you do have a voice, and every person's opinion counts, and it's up to us to make a difference. And if you can't deal with what's going on, make a change.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to add one thing about what's happening with this documentary that I'm producing on the abuses in the family law system. My co-producer recently had two temporary restraining orders put on him by two of the people who are subject of our investigation.
Uh-huh.
And this is public record, so I can name them by name.
And who are these court-oriented people?
Michelle Samus, who is a court mediator. If there's anybody out there who's had any problems with Michelle Samus, I'm very interested in hearing your stories. And the other person is Dr. Melissa Beranger, PhD, who has written a number of evaluations on people who have resulted in their children being taken away from them.
All for their own good, I'm quite sure.
Oh, I'm sure. She has her expert opinion why these parents are no longer capable of taking care of their own children, and the state must step in.
I'm calling the case of Lisa Ann and her baby Star.
Yes.
Do we have any updates on that one? Any updates on that, Becky, do we know of? Last I heard, she had the baby was taken away for 6 months in spite of Kate Wells, volunteer attorney's most determined efforts, and you yourself did sort of you attempted to film some of that for your documentary. We're given the hassle by the juvenile court, but got some of it outside, I believe.
We were not treated very hospitably at the youth court up on Graham Hill, and there was somewhat of controversy about whether we could film there at all. However, I was able to go into chambers with Commissioner Cloud and negotiate the terms for filming up there, so we did, in spite of pressure to leave, we did continue to film and interview both Lisa Ann and her lawyer, Kate Wells, on the case.
But we don't have any updates on that at the moment?
I spoke to Lisa Ann recently, and she has requested that we come with her when she goes to visit her baby in Watsonville at the foster care home. And we're in the process of negotiating for that filming to occur.
Let me turn for a moment now to a media release which I read on the internet dated January 2nd of this year concerning Free Radio Berkeley. Free Radio Berkeley is really the inspiration for this station.
All right.
And it is probably one of the first successful, though not the first, but certainly the first in the most recent series of stations that's been successful in broadcasting regularly, truly independent, truly non-commercial stuff. I mean, there has been the Pacifica Network, which for years prided itself on being listener-sponsored, but in my view, in the last decade, it's completely sold out. They've kicked out William Mandel, they've kicked out Mama O'Shea, they've kicked out a whole bunch of people that dared to question some of their internal policies. They're taking money from large corporations. They're no longer KPFA. We're talking here, folks. KPFA, KPFK, WBAI, Pacifica. In fact, there have been there's extensive stuff that's been done about this on Free Radio Berkeley and Free Radio San Francisco, tapes we hope to be able to play. But Free Radio Berkeley, as I said, is really a rootin' tootin' pioneer station, and we began in the spring of this year sort of on the heels of Free Radio Berkeley, with the support of the engineers and technicians of Free Radio Berkeley, with programming to some extent from Free Radio Berkeley, with the moral example of Free Radio Berkeley before us. Here's the press release.
Blessed be.
What's that?
Blessed be.
Blessed be, indeed. Yes, thank you, Suzanne. Anyway, this is the press release that I'm going to bring to you now from Free Radio Berkeley. FCC and NAB join forces to silence Free Radio Berkeley. 1 week after filing a motion in federal court asking for an injunction to stop Free Radio Berkeley from broadcasting, the Federal Communications Commission has been joined by the National Association of Broadcasters in its effort to stop the growth of the micro-radio movement across the United States. By filing a friend of the court amicus brief, the National Association of Broadcasters now stands in support of the FCC's motion to enjoin Free Radio Berkeley. That's the Federal Communications Commission. Free Radio Berkeley has remained a First Amendment thorn in the side of the FCC since its first broadcast on April 11, 1993. Since the FCC's motion for a preliminary injunction was denied by a federal district court on January 20, 1995, a year ago, the micro-radio movement has continued to grow, giving the people of this country access almost for the first time to the airwaves. This joint action by the FCC and the NAB, that's the National Association of Broadcasters, sets the stage for another First Amendment confrontation. The case will be heard in district court in Oakland, California. Get your pencils out, folks. In Oakland, California, on February 2nd, 1996, that's next month, in courtroom 2 at the federal building, 13th and Clay Streets. A free speech support demonstration will start.
Let's set up a carpool and get everybody out there to support it.
Sounds like a good idea to me, Suzanne. A free speech support demonstration will start at 9 a.m. The hearing begins at 10:30 a.m. I repeat, the case will be heard in district court in Oakland, California on February 2nd, 1996 in courtroom number 2 at the federal building, 13th and Clay Streets. Free speech demo, 9 a.m. Hearing, 10:30 a.m. 9 and 10:30, so maybe indeed we'll get some kind of a caravan. Since the beginning of this legal battle, the FCC has steadfastly refused to recognize the merits and constitutional issues raised by Free Radio Berkeley. Now they seek to have Free Radio Berkeley and Stephen Dunifer permanently barred from the airwaves without even letting a court even consider our substantive constitutional arguments. Luke Hyken, Dunifer's attorney, filed a responding brief on behalf of Free Radio Berkeley on Friday, December 22nd. It is accompanied by a supporting brief filed by the National Lawyers Guild's Committee on Democratic Communications on behalf of itself and the Media Alliance and the Women's International News Gathering Service. Another amicus brief will be filed on behalf of Free Radio Berkeley listeners, community organizations, and other micropower free radio stations. Speaking for the National Lawyers Guild Committee on Democratic Communications, attorney Alan Korn commented, "In spite of the Communication Act's requirement that the FCC regulate the airwaves, quote, in the public interest, and that they ensure the best use of new technologies, the FCC refuses to promote citizen access, arguing instead that it is more, quote, efficient to allow corporations and the Rupert Murdochs of the world to control the airwaves."
Because they have $100,000.
Yeah. "At no time in our history have so many broadcast stations been controlled by so few. Entire communities, cultures, and ideas are now systematically excluded from the airwaves. It is only by reclaiming the airwaves by direct grassroots action that the American public can regain its voice and begin to engage in true self-expression, which is the essence of self-government. This is why the National Lawyers Guild Committee on Democratic Communications is committed to fight for the legal rights of Stephen Dunifer and Free Radio Berkeley." Speaking for Free Radio Berkeley, and as the named defendant, Stephen Dunifer said, "With the outrageous claim that the federal court has jurisdiction to issue an injunction against me, but does not have jurisdiction to hear my challenge to the constitutionality of FCC's rules barring low-power radio, the FCC is attempting to shield itself from judicial scrutiny and deprive me of my First Amendment rights and due process. Who are they to determine what is in the public interest when their own chairman, Reed Hunt, has stated that the FCC's current implementation of the public interest mandate is intellectually indefensible." That's a quote. "The FCC's current implementation of the public interest mandate is intellectually indefensible, according to Reed Hunt. Free Radio Berkeley and all the other micropower broadcasters will not be silenced by this self-serving cabal of corporate broadcast media interests and their lackey, the FCC. As the guardian of the airwaves, as a public trust, the FCC is guilty of desertion, reckless endangerment, and dereliction of duty. What are they going to do to stop this movement? Make the possession of a transistor a felony offense? Alan Hopper, another member of the legal team, stated, "The FCC's audacity is amazing. They themselves have gone into the Federal District Court and have invoked the jurisdiction of the court to ask for their injunction against Free Radio Berkeley. Now they argue that the court doesn't have jurisdiction to determine whether the regulations their injunction request is based upon are constitutional. They are essentially telling Judge Wilkin that she has jurisdiction, but if and only if she agrees to grant their injunction." An injunction, for you folks who don't know, is a court order that will put Free Radio Berkeley and this station, I might add, Free Radio Santa Cruz, off the air.
I don't think so.
Otherwise, says the FCC, no jurisdiction. The FCC's audacity is even more incredible when you look back to their position before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in the case of Dugan versus FCC, where Bill Dugan challenged the FCC's regulations in the Court of Appeals, the very court the FCC now argues has exclusive jurisdiction to hear challenges to their regulations. In Dugan, the FCC argued to the court that, quote, jurisdiction to decide Dugan's arguments is vested in the United States District Court, unquote. The FCC's blatant attempts at forum shopping and that evading judicial review of their unconstitutional ban on micro radio should and will be rejected by the court. We believe that the court will deny the FCC's request for summary judgment, and we are ready for a trial on the merits at which we will prove that the FCC's ban of micro radio is not in the public interest and violates the First Amendment. Seeing the NAB, National Association of Broadcasters, filing an amicus brief supporting the FCC reminds me of the argument that the FCC made when the National Lawyers Guild filed its amicus brief, that the court should refuse the brief because the Lawyers Guild and the Free Radio Berkeley attorney, Luke Hyken, are one and the same, interchangeable. That charge is much more accurate when applied to the National Association of Broadcasters, which is the lobbying arm of the corporate media cabal and the FCC. They, really, are two heads of the same monster. Copies of all legal documents are available upon request. For further information, contact, get your pencils out, folks, Luke Hyken, attorney at law, 415-705-6460, 415-705-6460, or Stephen Dunifer, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 510-644-3779, 510-644-3779, or National Lawyers Guild Committee on Democratic Communications.